I've lived in New Jersey my entire life, and I've been involved in lots of arts, acting, writing. I even married a musician. But a lot of people don't think New Jersey is known for arts and culture. Well, they're wrong. And my goal is to introduce everyone to the most talented people I know. They're singers, they're writers, they're musicians, they're actors, they're chefs, they're martial artists, they're everything you can imagine, and they're going to be on my show. Every one of them. Well, maybe not every one of them, but a lot of them. So they're in New Jersey, and maybe they're not so famous, but maybe they should be. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey. Most of you are no doubt familiar with Asbury Park, and many of you are probably also familiar with the Asbury Park Showroom, a classic theater that's been around forever. Now, I had the opportunity recently to talk with Royce Meyer, the man who is responsible for the showroom's programming, among other things. In this conversation, Royce and I talk about his ever-expanding position, as well as Asbury Park, movies in general, horror movies specifically, and my all-time favorite horror movie. Please forgive the terrible sound quality. I was experiencing technical difficulties. Hello, Royce.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
The showroom is a classic cinema in Asbury Park, or how would you describe it?
We're actually going through some transition right now. We were originally a first-run movie house. Last year, due to some many technical difficulties, we went on a little bit of a hiatus, and we are now reopening in more of a repertory style, but holding on to the events-oriented aspect of things. So there's live performances as well.
So what kind of live performances?
We just had James Dalton, who's singer and sort of storyteller. We had a fellow named Ben Miller who mixes science with comedy. And we have an ongoing comedy night called The Scoop that three business owners from Asbury, from Amici Gelato Shop, Wacky Tabacky, and DJ's Delights, got together and have been doing the last Monday of each month. And they've really developed a following. Three of them are real characters.
Yeah. Are you programming director, or is your job a little more expansive?
My job title is ever expanding, but the stuff I enjoy most is curating the programming. I mean, when I first came on at the showroom, we're still doing first-run films, and it's sort of funny, they weren't actually hiring at the time or even accepting resumes. But I hounded Jeff Lindenberger, our previous general manager, who is now a very close friend and mentor. So they kind of told me we're not hiring. And I was sort of like, well, you know what? I think you are. And that's how I wound up there. And
sometimes that's what it takes. You know,
yeah.
Sometimes you need to be aggressive about
it. Well, as soon as I heard they were reopening, I really, really wanted in whatever capacity that looked like. And it started off as primarily, I have a background in box office. Mm. From a concert venue I worked at for about 10 years in New York called Town Hall.
Oh, yeah, I know Town Hall.
So I knew the box office end of things, and Jeff really took me under his wing and taught me how to program the projectors and do all that kind of more technical stuff that I was a little intimidated by, actually. Mm-hmm. My first sort of stab at curating was spearheading a screening of The Living End, which was a film from 1992 that was having its 30th anniversary. And it was an important film as far as new queer cinema went, and was the 30th anniversary of the coining of that term by B. Ruby Rich. It was kind of a angry response to the AIDS epidemic, but also a very funny, dark, funny film by Greg Araki. It was a risk, and it paid off. We got a great audience for it. It really opened some conversations.
Asbury's a great venue. Yeah.
Exactly. So it opened some conversations that I thought were important. And from then on, I was kind of spearheading the occasional screening. This was when we were still doing first-run films.
Right. Looking at the programming that you've had and what's planned in terms of movies, mm-hmm. I see some themes emerging. Obviously, LGBTQ issues are one of those themes. Weed is another theme.
Oh, yes. We did the Dazed and Confused screening with Wacky Tabacky, our neighbors across the street.
Now, have you thought about doing Reefer Madness?
Oh, we're going to do Reefer Madness because Reefer Madness is actually a public domain film. We were thinking about doing a double feature on 420 of Reefer Madness and then Up in Smoke, Cheech and Chong. Mm-hmm. And pairing up with Wacky Tabacky again.
And of course, New Jersey classics. I know you have a
yes.
A
our
plan
made in
for that.
Our Made in Jersey series is actually really kind of close to my heart. I'm from New York, but I'm coming up on 10 years here in New Jersey. I had kind of a bad breakup with New York. One of those messy, confusing breakups.
You anticipated one of my questions. Okay.
Well, yeah, I wasn't expecting New Jersey to be more than just a pit stop, and I'm so thrilled to say that I am coming up on 10 years here. And part of this series is me really embracing that, I think, because I had been looking at some of Film Forum in New York's programming, and they had done a November New York series, and I was like, well, why not a New Jersey series?
Yeah.
New Jersey January.
And you know, there are a lot of New Jersey filmmakers.
There are a lot. Yeah. I really went down a rabbit hole with that.
Right. I don't know. Do you know Doug Bollinger?
I've heard of, yeah.
Yeah, I interviewed him recently. Yeah, he very interesting. Yeah, he does a lot of horror films.
Well, that's what people have been asking for. When I put out the titles, which so far last night we showed Woody Allen's Stardust Memories, which has just such fantastic footage of Asbury and Belmar and Deal and Neptune and Ocean Grove especially. And then doing Welcome to the Dollhouse, the Todd Salon's dark comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin Smith's Clerks, shot in Leonardo. And then we had originally planned to start with Atlantic City, the Louis Malle film, but because of weather, we had to postpone that.
Yeah.
So we'll be closing with Atlantic City. The main feedback I've been getting is, why didn't you choose this film? Why didn't you choose that film? And it's a lot of horror films. It's horror films like Friday the 13th and The Prowler.
Yeah, people can see those almost anywhere.
People love to see it with an audience now.
Yeah.
I'm realizing that there is a comeback to the movie theater business that's been slow.
Yeah, I think after COVID, for a while, people were like, I'm not going out still. I still haven't been back to the movies except to see It's a Wonderful Life.
Because you can't miss that.
Oh, God. And you know, it's funny because some movies do not translate well from the small screen to the big screen. Wizard of Oz. Love that movie. I saw it on the big screen. Not so much because you can see all the flaws.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell that's a backdrop. You can see. So it's like it lost some of the magic.
Gotcha.
But It's a Wonderful Life, no. It was even better because you could see details that you missed, like the skull on Mr. Potter's desk, which people never notice.
There's a lot of fun details in that film. And it's just such a beautifully shot film and really is timeless.
Oh, and the story is great. Yeah. You know, there's one movie, my favorite movie, and I guess you'd consider, I think it's considered a horror film. It was made in 1935. Bela Lugosi is in it. And it's been remade. The remake isn't nearly as good. It's Island of Lost Souls.
Oh, I am more familiar with the remake, which I was not super impressed with.
Yeah, no. I can reenact my very favorite scene, which I'm going to do. We may cut it out, but I love this scene.
Okay.
Now, you know the story that there's this island. He's experimenting on these animals to turn them into men. Burn
Island
out the,
of Dr. Monroe, you mean?
Island of Dr. Moreau is the remake.
Oh, that's the remake.
Yes.
Because I think there's two versions of that
there
as
might
well.
Be. But it's the Island of Lost Souls.
Okay, so that was the original.
Right. So when the sailor that gets shipwrecked there, he tries to escape. And he's running through the woods. And he gets surrounded by all of these half-man, half-creatures.
Mm.
And they're, you know, coming at him. And Dr. Moreau shows up with his whip. And he goes, "What is the law?" And the speaker of the law says, "Not to eat meat, that is the law. Are we not men?" And they all go, "Are we not men?" And it's chilling.
It's not a bad Bela Lugosi, I must say.
It's just great. It's so much better than the remake.
Okay.
I was so disappointed when I saw the remake. I was like, oh God, how could anybody even like that? But I'd love to see it on the big screen.
Okay, I'm listening.
So,
we're always looking for feedback from our patrons.
And especially because it's something that I've never, ever seen it shown in a theater.
Some of the older films, it's very hard to find the distribution rights for.
Right. But if getting back to LGBTQ issues, because despite Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump, they are still important to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is accurate or not, but it seems to me that like back in the 20s and 30s, people were a little more accepting of homosexuality.
Well,
and then there was a turn.
You can see a lot of that in The Celluloid Closet, the documentary that really kind of chronicles representation throughout film history. And there was a definite shift where LGBTQ characters were suddenly either victims or villains.
Yeah.
And there was really no in between.
Is there any discussion on why that happened?
Throughout the film there is, and it was just the way culture was shifting.
They needed somebody to blame for something.
Something
like now the whole trans thing, we're going to blame drag queens for everything that's wrong in the country.
Which brings me to a screening we do have planned for Women's History Month. We're doing a lot of interesting stuff. We had a film festival in October called Bread and Roses, which was all female filmmakers. Mm. And I happened to live across the street from one of the directors of that festival. She and I got together and started talking about what we're going to show for Women's History Month. And aside from the titles we agreed upon, we're also going to be screening the documentary about Candy Darling, who was one of Warhol's trans superstars. Mm-hmm. It'll be the 50th anniversary of her death. So we're going to really try to honor her in a special way.
Yeah, one of my very favorite female filmmakers is Lena Vertmiller. I just love her movies. It's like they always start out really funny, mm-hmm. and then there's a point where you're like, is that supposed to be funny or horrible?
And
then it turns horrible.
Right, it definitely challenges the audience.
Like Seven Beauties. Mm-hmm. It starts out, it's so funny in that concentration camp, which sounds weird, but then like finally, it's like, whoa, wait a minute, this is terrible. And all her movies seem to be like that.
There's a few on our short list.
Yeah.
We haven't put it together yet. We're, again, looking at distribution fees and what's affordable. And, you know, we were interested in the film I Shot Andy Warhol, but apparently it is completely lost. The director doesn't even know who owns the rights.
Really?
So, which is about Valerie Solanas and the Scum Manifesto and the whole shooting of Andy Warhol, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Great film by Mary Harron.
So many schools have cut back on arts education and arts in general. Are there any plans for the showroom to focus on kids and on arts education for kids?
That's a good question. I think that's a great, great possibility. Right now, we're still kind of finding our footing and just playing around with these kind of small series of films. But I mean, I went to a specialized high school. I went to LaGuardia in New York, and I studied visual arts. So I was rather spoiled by the amount of arts education I received at a young age. But I definitely see it as an issue that it's not as easily accessible. So that would be a very interesting idea. I know a good friend of ours, Lex, who now works at the Asbury Park Library. They had worked at the showroom when I first started, and they had talked about bringing some kids from the library to do some screenings. So that's something we're looking into.
When I was growing up, Asbury Park was like you went there to go to the boardwalk. That was the thing for Asbury Park. What was the impression of Asbury Park you had before you moved there, and how was that different than you had imagined?
My mother moved to Ocean Grove shortly after I graduated high school, which is over 20 years ago now, back when Cookman Avenue had every other storefront was empty.
Yeah.
I've been here about 10 years, and I feel like there was this gradual transition that then kind of sped up rapidly, and all the rents went up, and all these, you know, we're showing the film Atlantic City, which is shot in 1979 and came out in 1980. And I think there's a lot of parallels between the kind of juxtaposition of deterioration and renewal that took place in Atlantic City, and not necessarily for the best.
Right. Like none of the renewal in Asbury Park is on the west side.
Right.
It's all the boardwalk in downtown.
Yeah, and it's all for people of a certain income. And
yeah. I had a friend who had a business on Cookman Avenue. Well, you've been there 10 years. Mr. Fashion.
Oh, I have a picture of myself in front of Mr. Fashion I'm going to send to you.
Okay. The original owner, Carl, Carl Williams, I think, he sold it to my friend. And after a few years, he got a notice that he was going to have to vacate it for 3 months while they renovated. And then his rent was going to double. So like many other black business owners in Asbury Park, he was just basically pushed out of the city.
Priced out.
Yeah. I mean, he had to move. He moved to a strip mall in Ocean Township. And of course, didn't work. Because people that went to Mr. Fashion went, oh, it's not here anymore. And they just figured it was gone. And that had been a thriving business.
I remember like probably 2004, it was still open. And yeah, it was just I found it such a charming spot.
What's your least favorite thing about Asbury Park?
aside from the astronomical rents, I guess the lack of diversity, as you said, on
the business side.
I think that could definitely use some shaking up.
Which is ironic, since it was before it was all black businesses, black owned businesses, or at least people of color.
Yeah.
And now they're like none.
I don't have a lot of bad things to say about Asbury, honestly. Yeah. I've been very happy there. You know, I didn't ever think I'd leave New York, and I feel like I've found a home again.
Yeah, that's great. How different are you at work than you are with your family and friends?
I feel like my work mode is very detail-oriented, which I am in quote-unquote real life as well, just not to the same extent. Like I said, when I have a vision, I want to execute it to the best of my ability, and I feel like that occurs more at work than it does in my everyday life.
You'd probably like my pantry because it is so organized.
Yeah.
The shelves have labels to say what's in it. And then each jar top has the name of what's in it. So when I open it, I can see exactly what everything is.
Oh, it's funny that you say that because my favorite Christmas present was that label maker where you like click, 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 to get to the letter you wanted and then press down hard. And made those embossed label stickers. Mm-hmm. I use those everywhere, except the adhesive doesn't work that well.
I know. Everybody, that reminds me of that Seinfeld episode where he labeled all the boxes and all the labels came off.
That sort of happened with my Operation Clean Up My Closet project during the pandemic.
Yeah.
All my labels fell off. Yeah, one of my goals was definitely to get better organized this year because I'm in charge of both the programming and the social media accounts for the theater and to a certain degree the website upkeep. It's a broad job title.
So what did you want to be when you grew up?
I always wanted to be an artist and involved in the arts in some way.
What other arts are you involved in, even just personally?
I'm more of a crafter, which I think it's a bad name.
I know. I feel the same way because I like a lot of crafts too. And it does seem like, oh, crafts.
Yeah. It's got a connotation. Yeah. But I had been to Sweden a couple of times in my 20s, and that's where the Raya rug originated, which were the large-scale shag rugs. And I got really into buying up vintage Latchuk rug kits off of eBay when eBay was still affordable, and sort of reconfiguring the designs and reconfiguring the color schemes. I had done a series of large-scale Latchuk rugs that I was very proud of.
So you see a lot of movies, obviously.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite movie star?
I love Parker Posey. We showed one of my absolute favorite films of hers as our Thanksgiving film this year. I don't even know if I should tell this story, but I mean, I've seen the movie. It's called The House of Yes, and I've probably seen it about 20 times. Mm. I know exactly what this film is about, and despite knowing that it had some very dark themes, I continued to advertise and push it as this kooky holiday classic. And then the night before the screening, it really hit me that I was about to go up and introduce this film that had some really questionable themes. And
you hadn't prepared your audience for that.
Exactly. And it was one of the few instances where I needed someone to fall on the sword for me. And I asked my friend Ray, who teaches at Middlesex. I called him and I was like, I don't think I can get up there and introduce The House of Yes and prepare an audience for it with the proper, for lack of a better word, trigger warnings. And he was like, oh, absolutely. He's a bit of an amateur thespian, so he's a total ham. He's like, I'll do it. He's someone I really admire because he's able to, without any sort of script, just get up there and get people feeling comfortable and laughing. And
how did he describe it?
The film centers around twins that are having sexual relations.
Incest.
And part of their kinky foreplay is reenacting the Kennedy assassination. And we happen to be showing it on the 60th anniversary of JFK's assassination.
Yeah, that is kind of
and
dark.
And somebody on Facebook was like, oh, are you showing this in honor of JFK? And I was like, I had to look at the calendar and I was like, oh my God, this is in such poor taste. And plus, Daria, the owner of the theater, has twins. So I'm like, double whammy. And I'm like, I can't cancel this film. We've sold a lot of tickets. And I was like, I just need you to get up there and like sell it for me. And he did a tremendous job of it. I was really impressed. And I've really tried to take some notes from him. In any case, to answer the question, I love Parker Posey. I've been a huge, huge Michelle Pfeiffer fan since I was a very young kid, starting with Grease 2, which I'm a little embarrassed to admit, but...
Well, you were a kid.
I was a kid, and I just absolutely thought she was incredible. And then as Catwoman, of course, in Batman Returns. I've been really enjoying Margot Robbie lately.
And what has she been in recently?
Well, she was Barbie.
Duh.
And we just showed I, Tonya, where she plays Tonya Harding on the 30th anniversary of
the attack. I love Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding was an underdog. I love Tonya Harding too.
And that bitch, who was it that she...
It was Nancy Kerrigan.
Oh, she was such a bitch.
So we...
Oh, she deserved it.
We were giving free small popcorns to anyone who showed up with a bandaged knee.
Oh.
That was our little gimmick promo. And a lot of people showed up. It was fun. It was a really, the audience really had a lot of fun with that screening. And no one could believe it had been 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what's something I've never seen and you're probably going to be amazed? The Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Well, if you haven't seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show, I recommend you starting with Phantom of the Paradise, which we'll be showing for the 50th anniversary. It is Brian De Palma's rock opera. It's a very much a glam rock, early disco era version of Phantom of the Opera, and it's fantastic.
Now, the thing about Rocky Horror, I've tried to watch it. I think you have to watch it in a crowd, and you have to know all the stuff that you're supposed to do.
It's an audience oriented.
Watching it on television is like, yeah, this is, no. it's not doing it for me.
Yeah.
Are there movies that other people think are incredible that you think were like just not worth the time?
Saltburn.
Really?
I haven't disliked a movie so much in a very long time.
Because I've heard all these people raving about it.
Yep. People whose opinions I trust emphatically are so into this movie, and I just, I came away embarrassed for the film, insulted as an audience member.
Yeah, that's the way I felt about Baby Driver.
Oh, okay.
I was like, this is one of the stupidest movies I've ever watched. And the thing that people raved about, everything is in time with the music, so what? That doesn't make it a good movie.
Right.
I don't know. You've seen that movie?
I've seen that movie.
I think we walked out in the last 5 minutes. It was like, I can't even sit another 5 minutes in this movie. It's so terrible. Like, and I've never walked out of a movie.
My friend and I just kept looking at each other throughout Saltburn. And once we realized that we were both on the same page and could start laughing at it, we had a better time. But it was just...
People raved about it.
It was just trying so hard to be transgressive, trying so hard to shock the audience. And none of it was moving the plot along.
You take a movie like My Cousin Vinny. Now, there's a lot of humor in that movie. But every bit of humor moves the story forward. Mm-hmm. When he falls in the mud.
Huh?
That comes back later on. There's a reason for it. It's not just because it's funny.
Right.
But it's part of the plot.
Yeah.
And to me, that's good filmmaking.
That's definitely good filmmaking.
You know, just to do something just for the sake of doing it just really annoys me.
This was very much shock value for shock value, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah.
We host the Asbury Park Movie Club every Wednesday night, and they've been watching the Oscar-winning Best Picture in chronological order from the beginning.
Ooh.
And I believe they are up to Slumdog Millionaire now. So they've been at it for over a year, and some of them are doozies. Some of those Oscar-winning best pictures.
Like what?
Crash.
Yeah, it's hard to think that that was the best movie.
Out of all the movies that year, yeah, you know what I mean?
And actually, it is a good movie, but The Music Man. That got the Oscar for Best Film the same year, I think, as West Side Story.
Oh.
I mean, West Side Story, to me, that's the epitome of a great musical.
It really is, yeah. And I'm not a musical man. Yeah. But...
Well, one of the worst movies, Plan 9 from Outer Space.
So let me tell you, this year is going to be, would have been, Ed Wood's 100th birthday. So we are actually planning on...
Oh, and Ed Wood's a...
We're going to do a little Ed Wood retrospective.
Oh, cool.
Because, again, public domain.
I have Plan 9 in my library.
We've got Plan 9 and we've got Glenn or Glenda. And then it also happens to be the 30th anniversary of Tim Burton's Ed Wood with Johnny Depp.
Oh, yes.
So we're going to tie the three of them together. Speaking of Bela Lugosi, we had Martin Landau in that role, who's just fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're going to try to tie those three films into one weekend where we've just been looking on the calendar.
Oh, that's a great idea.
As to when the right time is. One of the goals of mine at the showroom actually is to team up more with the local businesses because we've had a lot of luck with that. We've teamed up with Wacky Tabacky, obviously, with Groovy Graveyard and the arcade shops on Cookman. We're looking to team up with them to show some of the early Roger Corman stuff, like the original Little Shop of Horrors with Jack Nicholson, The Terror with Vincent Price, Wasp Woman, A Bucket of Blood. There's some really good ones. And we've teamed up with Lake House Recording Studio for some of the rock and roll documentaries we do. I was talking to Larry Cadillac, Barbershop, about showing Hairspray and Wigstock the movie and maybe Shampoo.
Well, hair-related.
All hair-related stuff.
Yeah, of course, hair.
Hair, of course. That's a good one.
Yeah.
The list goes on.
So here's my last question.
What's that?
What do you want your epitaph to say?
Really throwing me a hard one there. creative soul, good son, I'd like to think. Something that recognizes a creative contribution, because that's what I am really all about.
All right. Well, thank you, Royce.
Thank you.
This was fun.
Yes.
I've got some movies to watch.
Definitely.
I love the arts, and I love to talk, and that's why I'm talking to local artists. And if you like listening, then subscribe to my podcast. You can do it on this page, on iTunes, or anywhere you get podcasts. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey. We'll be right back.